From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of September 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, news circulating on the Hill suggests the House of Representatives may try its hand at drafting legislation to limit ethanol use when corn supplies are tight. The new U.S. ambassador to China thinks the PRC should open up its economy, and a couple of new surveys show most people don't know anything about how farming and ranching happens. Despite this, they base their grocery cart decisions on how they think the food was grown. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll check in on the agricultural weather forecast as we bring you this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day lower in the corn and the bean pits, but wheat was higher and up 7 cents to settle the December contract for the soft red at $6.40¾, up 7 cents again. March futures at $6.75¼, 8 higher, and July of next year at $6.98, up 5¼. The hard red in Kansas City at $7.54¼, 11¼ higher to finish the week. December futures in the corn pit down 11½ cents, $6.38½. March at $6.52, 11 cents lower. May corn $6.59½, down 11¼. And July at $6.63½, down 10¾. December futures $5.78½, 11 cents lower. November bean futures at $12.58, down 25. January at $12.69, they finished 25¼ lower. March contract at $12.76½, down 25¾. And the May soybeans down 25¾ at $12.82¼. July futures $12.90 from the bean pit, 26 cents lower. November of next year at $12.53¼. Down 26¼. Bean meal, $3.26, down $4.90. Bean oil at $52.40, down $1.28 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the October at $116.82½, up 57½ cents. September feeders at $132.10, a nickel higher, and lean hogs at $88.80, up 45 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $80.02 a barrel, down 50 cents. Ethanol at $2.52, 3 6/10 lower. And natural gas at $3.70 6/10, a tenth of a cent higher. Heating oil futures at $2.79 9/10, down 4 8/10 cents. And the gold futures for the day at $1,637.50 an ounce, down $101.70. The Dow Jones at 10,714, just about 20 points lower, and the dollar at 78.5 is up 0.05 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll have mostly sunny skies, a high near 69 degrees, northwest winds at about 8 miles an hour, although it's partly to mostly cloudy outside this afternoon. At the immediate time tonight, mostly cloudy. Those moved in early, didn't they? A low of 45 degrees, north-northwest winds at about 5 miles an hour. And tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 63. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 45, and on Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 64, north-northwest winds at 3 to 6. Sunday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 49, and on Monday, we'll see a 30% chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 67 degrees, mostly cloudy, Monday night with a low of 50, and Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high near 67 degrees, Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 52, Wednesday, mostly sunny and 74, Wednesday night, cloudy, and a low of 54 degrees. Thursday, sunny skies. And next week, a high near 75 degrees. A complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we talk with Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. That's just about the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets here on the Closing Market Report. Online with us today is Mike Zuzula with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time. It's been a heck of a week in Chicago, and much of it started with the Federal Reserve, which said we'd like to hold down the long-term mortgage rates, and we're going to make moves to do that. Oh, and they also made one little statement about the economy not being all that great, too, and things began to tumble. What'd you see?
Well, it was kind of a pile-on when it comes to organizations like the Fed and the IMF and the World Bank, Todd. It seemed like all three of them were very vocal this week. And at the same time, they were saying they wanted to calm market jitters and calm market fears. And I think the best way to look at what the actual data showed in terms of what they actually put out versus their rhetoric was how the financial markets reacted. I think we've probably gotten to a point where we lost the consumption, the private consumption, the Todd Gleason, Mike Zuzulo consumption confidence several months back or a couple months ago. The financial markets, though, continue to be relatively optimistic, and I think they bought into the governments and the central banks of the world saying that they were going to do a lot and they were going to help. But then we saw the actual application of how much they are willing to do and agree when it came to Greece and the European banks. And so now I think the financial markets are turning in terms of their confidence and their potential consumption in terms of buying risky assets, that they're turning, and they're maybe turning for the medium to longer term. So at the end of this week, we're at a pretty crucial stage. It's hurt the grain markets, there's no question about it, but there could be more hurt around the corner, in my view anyway, if we lose the S&P 500's lows from early August when our country was downgraded. And I say that because as our banks go lower, they lose their market capitalization, and that causes them to be more likely to have to go to the government or the Fed or the Treasury for a bailout. And all of a sudden, you've worked yourself into the 2008 fear, in that fear into a reality. And that's what we started to kind of bake into prices this week. And it all goes back to what you talked about with the Federal Reserve. I think that rhetoric by the Federal Reserve was very, very negative compared to market expectations. And what they did with this Operation Twist by trying to take long-term rates lower, which are mainly mortgages, really, I think, question the market to how it's a pretty impotent thing to do in the short term, and it's going to take months and months and months for that to actually work into the real economy. And let's face it, in Europe and the United States, we don't have months and months and months.
So the federal government, the Fed, has run out, the Fed has run out of things to do. We've heard that oftentimes from newscasters, and not so much from the Fed, but they've gotten to the bottom of the barrel, I suppose, of what they can manage. And they employed or are deploying one of those tools starting this week. It will take some time for the marketplace to accept all of that. It's a longer-term impact. And then you've got Greece and the European Union. And I'm wondering, do the folks with the Eurozone need to move more swiftly than they have in order to stave off some serious problems? And would that help if they moved?
Yeah, not just in Europe. I think this is the huge thing for the commodity trader is that Europe has been hitting China harder than anybody else. You can talk about Greece and you can talk about Spain, you can talk about Italy, but the European situation, because of how tied the Chinese are to the Europeans for their trade and their GDP, you're seeing the Hong Kong market hitting. This is the neatest statistic of all week, Todd.
Okay.
The Hong Kong market hit its lowest point since October of 2008. Copper had its worst week since October of 2008. And that all relates back to Europe, in my view, that there's no real solid foundation by the European Central Bank and the EU countries, and China's taking it the brunt of that. So what happens after that is the Chinese market goes down. All of a sudden, the talk starts to emanate that we're under a property bubble, and all of a sudden, the news broke in the Financial Times this week that Chinese asset holders of property will probably have to slash their prices in China because they're going to have their funding cut off, all because of the Hong Kong market dropping and the Asian shares dropping because of Europe. And so we are opening ourselves up to more of a domino effect And that's the unfortunate side of it when it comes to going back to 2008. My firm belief is we should not even have to be talking about 2008. We are a long way from 2008 fundamentally and economically. And I've been talking about a double-dip recession for many, many months now, but I don't think it's as bad as 2008. Why? Because the credit markets aren't as bad, and they don't need to get as bad. But if we keep on this path of doing nothing, then the credit markets are going to have to react, and that's what we started to see. The Euro LIBOR rate started to get up to the highest levels since March of 2009. What does that do? Well, that automatically starts to kick in that the dollar is a safe haven again. Gold is not, and so all of a sudden you see margin call selling. The biggest thing that hurt us today from a standpoint of recovery was that on the pit close in the metals markets, the silver dropped 15%, biggest one-day drop since 2006. And from a Bloomberg reporter that I know, and he sent out an email, it was margin call selling all over again. And I think that goes back to the program funds and the margin call pressure from all these assets dropping, and it just kind of piles on, and you get that negative spiral, that negative feedback loop. And again, yes, to answer your question, most of that translates back into the Europe not doing enough and that hurting China. And then there's that other element where the Federal Reserve is kind of impotent at this point, like you say.
Okay, so I'm going to take you back a little further, and not to 2008, but to 95, 96. And it appeared that the United States was poised with agriculture to grow rapidly. That was based on the Asian tigers at that point. We had a similar cropping situation where we were short, and things fell apart pretty quickly. Are there similarities that you can draw from that point in time to this time, or am I just not making the right connections?
No, I think you are from a standpoint of Asia. Unfortunately, the Asians, because of what's happening right now and what we just discussed, the Asians and the Chinese in particular are doing more poorly than they were in 2008, 2009. They are, the developing emerging markets are not going to be as powerful to help us if we do go back in the developed countries to another recession. That's where they are a lot more like they were back in 95, 96, 97. I would still go back to, in terms of the big picture macroeconomics, we're closer to the early 1980s of stagflation, where we have higher prices, but we're losing demand, and monetary policy and unemployment are butting up against each other, and they're kind of drowning each other out. And so, and fiscal policy is mired down with politics. And so, in a holistic approach, I still see this closer to 80 through 83 than I do 95, 96. But that Asian element is closer to 95, 96 than it is 08. I think you're right on the money there.
What's the possibility that it's all just a ruse, and not really a ruse, but just wrong, and we'll come flying back?
Well, I think we'll know that relatively soon, because my biggest fear, what causes the most damaging recessions are when banks collapse. And then that's what happened in 08. That's why we called it the Great Recession, because it was just second to the Great Depression, because banks led us lower. If those banks continue to lose market capitalization, and this morning I picked on Bank of America because they've been in the news, but even a good, well-run bank like Bank of America or Wells Fargo, Wells Fargo's lost a third of its market capitalization since this spring. As their stock prices drop, they have a harder time funding, and they have a lot harder time lending money out. So as the banks go lower, and that's why these August lows are so important to me, is if we take those August lows out and that S&P 500 banking index, the BIX, leads us lower like it did in 2008, you're not going to have the United States to come around. You're not going to have China to come around. All of a sudden, we're going to be mired. And what happened in 08, 09 was we did see global trade drop about 20% when that recession was at its worst. And that's the most negative scenario for the commodity side. So that's where these lows in August for the S&P, to me, if they're taken out, then we have to go after the hedges again. The most likely commodity that would probably be hit the hardest, because it affects China and because it affects the currencies the most, would be the beans. And we've seen that already, but that would probably continue. So hedging beans and probably doing it on paper, it would be the smartest thing to do, in my opinion, and using January options, because the Novembers are so close to expiration.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzalo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, Sources say that legislation may be drafted in the U.S. House of Representatives that would reduce the federal mandate to use fuel ethanol when corn supplies are tight. Sources say the legislation would reduce the ethanol mandate by 25% when the corn-to-stocks use ratio is projected to be at less than 7%, and reduce it by 50% when the ratio is 5% or less, a bare-bones level for supplies. The ethanol mandate for this year is 12.6 billion gallons. Production is expected to exceed 13.5 billion gallons due to exports and high oil prices, which make ethanol attractive. New U.S. Ambassador to China Gary Locke is calling on China to accelerate the lifting of barriers to foreign investment and business access, revaluation of the Chinese currency, and to better enforce intellectual property rights protections in the first economics speech of his tenure to American business groups in Beijing. Locke delivered the speech to members of the American Chamber of Commerce in China and the U.S.-China Business Council. The U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance yesterday released the results of two surveys commissioned to collect attitudes toward food and how it is grown. Among the survey highlights, 72% of consumers know nothing or very little about farming or ranching. 69% of consumers think about food production at least somewhat often, and 70% say purchase decisions are affected by how food is grown and raised, with 72% of people saying they think about the topic while purchasing groceries. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop. And from Prairie Fruits Farm, makers of farmstead and artisan cheeses and growers of organic tree fruits and berries. This summer, Prairie Fruits holds a cheese and gelato open house on Tuesdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Information on products and activities at prairiefruits.com and on Facebook at Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, canning gets most of the attention when it comes to the fall food preservation season. But Lisa Brotz says there's another method worthy of consideration in this edition of In My Backyard.
So I ask you, what is not to like about the tartness, the sting of a really good pickle or a sharp yogurt or that last swig of buttermilk out of the carton or bottle? Or is that last one just me and my dad? Let's talk about pickling and fermenting for a few minutes. It seems to run a distant second to canning vegetables from the garden or the market when it comes to food preservation, at least in my very unscientific observations. It's just rarely what comes up in food preservation conversations. Maybe this is because it seems like there's a lot of, oh, just pour some briny water over those cucumbers and let them sit on the counter for a few days. Stuff like that. The instructions for pickling and fermentation sometimes run counter to what we've been taught about food safety, even though these methods of preserving foods have been used for millennia. They're putting bacteria, the good kind, to work. It could also be that the flavors can be really intense and the smells can be really pungent. Pickled and fermented vegetables are considered good for digestion and general health in many different cultures, but most of them use the foods in much smaller doses as a condiment or a side. And pickling and fermentation, especially fermentation, can also be a bit more volatile, but that might make things more interesting. If something explodes, you know you did it wrong. Considering how much I like pickly, fermenty things, it's a little strange I haven't attempted this on my own. I needed a guru, though, someone not far away who could give me a bit more insight into the process and help me get over my apprehension. Maybe even somewhere down the line, supervise me. And lo, I found a guy. He also happens to be my neighbor. Mark Hartstein is one of the chefs at Black Dog Smoke and Ale House in Urbana, Illinois. He calls himself the last of a dying breed because he's learned his craft entirely on the job. He has no formal culinary training. While his food is great, I actually recruited Mark for this piece thanks to the legendary pickles and occasional kimchi or fermented vegetables Korean style he makes for the restaurant. He also happens to live in my neighborhood and considers pickling and fermentation a hobby. It's a nod to his pickle-making grandmother. When I walked into his East Urbana kitchen on a recent Sunday morning, I immediately noticed that every corner of his very small home kitchen had something going on. And as the owner of a very small kitchen myself, this was encouraging and reassuring. Pots hung from racks, the cupboards were full, and there was an array of jars on the counters in various stages of fermenting, and finished products sat on the shelves. I didn't see many machines or gizmos, however. According to him, the home preserver doesn't need a lot of special equipment for pickling and fermenting.
No special equipment is required for this level. These are all refrigerator pickles, which I either brine or ferment and then throw in the refrigerator for some time. So it can be any container that doesn't rust, if you will. That's, I guess, the main consideration about refrigerator pickles. But they're all glass containers. They've all been sanitized with either water bath or bleach. So there's no special equipment required.
Of course, my biggest worry is failure. I hate wasting food. I wanted to know from him, do you fail with this stuff? What do you do when you fail, if you fail? He had some reassuring words for me there, too.
I have many failures. It's a long history. As a matter of fact, some of these jars that you're looking at, I was tasting earlier and was disappointed in a couple. So you eat your mistakes as long as they're not spoiled. And pickling is very forgiving about spoilage because it's either high in acidity or high in sodium. So nothing is dangerous with the pickle process per se. Yeah, you eat your mistakes, you throw them out, or you learn from them, and every year is a new batch.
He was heading to some local orchard soon, he said, to gather some apples for another fermentation project, making hard cider. And making batches of kimchi, which he and his wife eat all winter long, was high on the agenda, too. He already had lots preserved. The jars full of food, much of it either grown in his home garden or purchased at a farmer's market, were impressive in number, and they were gorgeous. Of course, he wasn't going to let me go without a sampler. So I left his house with a container full of pickled and fermented vegetables. I sat down later to a mini buffet. These are turnips, I bet. He said he got these turnips at the market, and they're the best turnips he's ever had. So let's try one. Mmm. Oh. These are a revelation. I'm not a huge fan of turnips, but I would totally eat them this way all the time. Mmm. Those are awesome. Those are definitely awesome. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, to take up the cash grain market. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
It's moved sharply lower. Has the basis squeezed up on it or not?
The basis has been steady. The basis had squeezed into some really historically pretty tight levels before we saw the board break back. So far it hasn't looked like it's been chasing anything.
And you suspect it will?
I suspect that the amount of basis improvement will probably be limited.
And why would that be the case?
I think just because we're getting into the harvest period, we'll see some of the nearby. You always have a few nearby sales that get made across the scale no matter what, so you'll see some of that. A lot of grain will be coming in and applied to contracts, and I think the balance will get stored.
And how about for soybeans?
Soybeans, pretty much the same situation. There's enough existing sales to feed the nearby demand on the market, contracts that were made earlier in the year.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at $6.29 on nearby corn and $12.29 on soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. We'll say so long now to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes when we'll talk with meteorologist Steve Hilberg.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois and Urbana-Champaign. WILL AM 580 is our home radio station. We've been telling you for a while that we will power down eventually, and that's going to happen. Not today, as you probably can still hear us. We think Monday is really the day it will happen. We'll wait and see. We've been thinking for a while that they would start the guy wire retrenching. And they haven't, but looks like on Monday they will. And so we'll be online for you at willag.org. That's willag.org. And, of course, you can always pick us up on your smartphone. That is at m.willag.org, m.willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. On the phone line with us for a Friday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is climatologist and meteorologist Steve Hilberg. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Steve, thanks for taking the time. Tell me about the weekend weather forecast, please.
Well, it's going to be a little bit different than we thought, maybe even earlier this week. We have a pretty strong cutoff low pressure system over the Great Lakes that's spinning around right now, and that's going to be basically sitting over the Great Lakes in the Midwest for the next 2 to 3 days. And that means when we get this kind of system, it means cooler weather and also occasional cloudiness and scattered showers. So we're going to be pretty much seeing the same thing from day to day, probably through Monday or Tuesday.
And how widespread, how heavy the rainfall?
Well, most of the rain won't be heavy. It tend to be a little bit heavier, I think, up in northern Illinois, perhaps along the lake where they might get some enhancement from the lake. As we go further south, we may get a good shower here and there, but generally it'll be pretty widely scattered and tend to be confined to the afternoons once the heating of the day comes up. I think we could see a lot of sunshine early in the day, both tomorrow, perhaps Sunday. But then as soon as that sun comes up and starts heating up the atmosphere, we get the clouds forming and then some scattered showers.
Much dew on the grass in the morning when we come up?
Probably not too much because of the overnight cloudiness, perhaps. But and there should be a good breeze most of the time. But things will tend to be on the damp side, maybe because of some dew. But in general, it looks like a pretty static weather pattern here for the next 3 days or so.
So probably 10 or 11 a.m. in the morning by the time producers can get into the field to harvest soybeans because they'll stop being so tough. And then, of course, if we've got rainfall, they're not
going to
be.
Yeah, there's going to be a very small window, I think, in general, that they're going to be able to get out the next couple of days. I saw a lot of combines moving today, so obviously they're trying to take advantage of the dry weather while they can.
If you look further out, do we have better conditions later in the week?
Yeah, we should see this system starting to lift out probably around Tuesday, and then getting some moderating temperatures toward the end of the week. There looks like a pretty good cold front may come through here Wednesday, but that probably won't have much of an effect other than to clear out the low-level moisture and bring us some decent weather. So I think probably by Thursday we'll see temperatures creeping into the 70s and could be in the mid-70s by Friday and Saturday.
And then turn your attention, and I don't know how much you have watched this and have an idea of what the weather forecast will look like for the Great Plains states and for Kansas and some of those areas where they need to put hard red winter wheat in the ground pretty quickly. They need their moisture and rainfall. They got some of that, but they'll need another one to make sure that they get that crop up. Do you think that'll happen?
Well, I don't know that it's going to happen in the next week or so. This next front coming through is going to be pretty dry, and there's nothing else coming in that might bring them that moisture, but holding out for beyond that.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. If you're in the field, be safe. Take an afternoon nap if you get the opportunity. I know you're just about to start work some pretty long hours. You'll be much safer if you just get a little sleep. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.